This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
Justin, were you recording? I missed that part.
During Pride Month, we're going to be shining a light on the LGBTQ community. And this week, we're joined by Oliver Hunt, a writer for Women's Sports Exchange and FanSided. Oliver's path began with theater and learning about lighting, which is what they do as a full-time gig. However, their passion has led to moonlighting and shining a light on the NWSL. All right, Darius.
I'm there at time that is. Let's go 54. Slam dunk.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Today, we're joined by Oliver Hunt of Women's Sports Exchange and FanSided, a writer. And excited to dive in and talk about Pride Month, what it means to you to write and cover women's soccer and women's sports, and dive into your background and how you got into it, because your job that you have full-time is not the same job that you do working in sports. So first of all, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So I'd like to start with your background in theater and lighting design. Can you give us a background on what you went to school for and what intrigued you about going to school for that major?
Yeah, for sure. So I sort of didn't know what to do with myself in high school. I was kind of all over the place as far as extracurriculars. So my parents were like, hey, you should do theater. But I never wanted to be on the stage because that seemed really scary. So I did the behind the scenes in high school and found a really great community. And got to do a lot of really cool, unique shows and had something to do with my after school time. And that sort of funneled into college, just finding this really interesting way to connect with people. I mean, theater is such a intimate art form, cause it's experienced live and within a certain setting. And so many things can go wrong, which keeps it really interesting, and really fast paced. So that's sort of what I was attracted to when I went into it in college.
What kind of classes and coursework do you go through to understand the lighting and how the lighting works? I feel like a lot of creatives could probably benefit from understanding some elements of the lighting that you had to do with theatrical lighting on the stage.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because we're so focused on making everything look good. So it's the human form and how you extenuate that through side lighting and front lighting, back lighting. And then there's all the scenery that also has to look good. The nice thing about theater is it's for the human eye. So we're not under the pressure as often of lighting for the camera, which is a lot harder because the camera doesn't lie as easily as your eye does. But I had to take a lot of classes in color theory, which are so helpful, and just the way that light color works is so different from like paint color, and that our primary colors are totally different. So learning about like the way that your eye perceives color through RGB, red, green, and blue, is so different from a lot of creatives that I know that rely on like the CMYK sort of color theory.
At what age did you know that you wanted to be a creative of any sorts? Was it like something that you grew up loving the color, draw, you know, paint, any of that? And what age was that when you kind of tapped into that creative space?
I think it has to do with there's a huge gap between me and my siblings. So I'm the oldest of three, and there's a 7-year gap between my sister and I. So for a while, it was just me and my parents, and I was really bored. So I just sort of became this really imaginative kid, and I would run around and make up stories because I didn't have siblings at the time to play with. And I got really into reading at a young age. My mom was really passionate about teaching me to read, so I could read before I went to kindergarten and was really into books. And then that sort of trickled into this love for writing, which was fictional for almost my whole life until I started writing for sports. I was writing fictionally for a long time. My parents used to tell everybody that I was going to go up and be a best-selling author. That has not come to pass yet. But I think it was that love of storytelling that also drove me towards theater, because that's really what theater is. It's just a very advanced art form of storytelling in all different forms.
And, you know, to kind of further that, when you got into theater, what drew you into wanting to write articles and all of that?
Partially because I had friends, and in the theater world, there's not a lot of sports overlap. Let's go with that. Everyone's really busy all the time, and everyone's all in on theater. So a lot of my friends were like, you need to find a different community to talk to this about, because no one here gets what you're saying. And so it was wanting to find an outlet for all of this passion that I had towards the subject that I wasn't finding an outlet for in theater school. And also just because it seemed like so much fun. I really fell into soccer by total accident and have just loved it ever since, and have been so attracted to the sport and the beautiful game and all the players in it.
Getting to cover a sport that you love, I know some people who work in sports, or whether it's writer, photographer, video, a lot of people cover things that they don't love because it gives them, there's no tie to it. How difficult or easy is it for you to cover a sport that you actually enjoy?
For me, it makes it easier. I could totally see how that would be, how it could make it harder, because you love it so much and you're so passionate about it. But I work a different job during the day, and so I have to pull a couple late nights a week to do the writing that I do. And it's that passion for loving and watching the sport that really gets me through some of those evenings. So I think that my love for it really helps me just push through some of the tougher moments and find the joy in the sport because I love it so much.
You mentioned your other full-time job. What do you do during the day?
Yeah, so I actually didn't even end up using my degree for its intended purpose. I am still a lighting designer, but I do architectural lighting design. So like your airports, your college dorms, your corporate offices, stuff like that, that all needs lighting as well. So I am in the architectural world as of right now. I just started a job in Boston about a month ago, right after graduation, and have been really enjoying that side of lighting as well.
Interesting. So what challenges do you face in that job that might be totally different when you're covering sports?
Yeah, for sure. Everything in the sports is kind of similar to theater in that it's really fast paced. So you have this game that happens over this short period of time. It's going to happen in that one period of time, and then it's going to be over. And everything that gets written and done about it afterwards is sort of like a reflection. In architectural world, you take years to do these projects because they're construction and they go in forever. So it's very different pacing wise, which I think is why I like having that balance in my life of doing something during the day that's a little more not relaxed, because it still can be very stressful when they put like an HVAC right where you need to put a light. But just the sort of slower pacing of it is really nice in comparison to like that fast-paced world of sports. But there's a lot of pressure in both fields. So I find that I grapple with that no matter what I do.
So I have a similar kind of not using degree kind of story. And for a while, I, you know, talked about not using my English degree. But with theater and lighting and what you do now, how much overlap, or how much from your teachings of learning that can you actually use in your day job? I know it's two different types of lighting and all that, but is there any overlap that you can take from what you learned in school to what you do now?
Oh, yeah. There's more than you would think, for sure. There is the property that people are like moths, which is very true. They will follow light. And that is true in an architectural setting when you are trying to guide people towards a destination by like using lines of light against walls or making one location brighter than another because you're instinctually trying to guide people to a place. And it's true in theater when you're trying to draw somebody's attention to one side of the stage. Usually in theater, you're doing it for distraction. So please look over here where the light is and not over here in the dark where we're changing the scenery. But in architecture, that same principle applies. It's people will follow light for sure in any field.
All right. So let's jump into the writing in Sports Job. What do you enjoy most about it? And what's probably been a big moment for you in covering soccer?
I love this league because it's so chaotic. The NWSL, the National Women's Soccer League, is just so full of talent that every game feels like anybody could come out on top. So it makes everything super interesting from a writing perspective because you never really know what's going to happen. I'm never able to like draft a prediction that's going to be true before a game. I do my best, but it doesn't usually work out just because there's so much talent in this league, and that's always super exciting. And it makes every game really different and really interesting. Big moment for me, probably I did an interview for KOUW about the Reigns opening weekend, the Seattle sect of like NPR. And my mom called me the next day and she was like, oh, I'm sorry, are you too busy? Can we talk to your secretary? Because you must be famous now, which is not true. But my parents weren't really into soccer ever, and I've sort of pulled them into it, and they're really proud of me. And that was a big moment for me when they were like acknowledging my accomplishments in the terms of like, oh, this isn't just like a fun thing that you do on the side. Like, you're getting to talk to actual people and doing really cool work, which is very exciting for me.
And part of your job is kind of, you know, now with the fast growing world of immediacy of sports and media, you know, writers have kind of taken a backseat in some areas. But talk about the importance of having people like yourself cover a league that is pretty new, pretty fresh, right? NWSL. How vital is it to have people like yourself writing for a pro league such as that one?
I think it's really important. I think that having that analysis that people get to read through and connecting with people is super important for a league that's so new. I mean, we have lots of players in the league that have been here the entire time it's existed, which is just crazy, considering some of the other leagues in the United States, that this one is very new. And so it's a privilege to get to write for a league and to get to expose it to so many people. So like, my words make an impact, for sure. I try to write several articles that are from the perspective of somebody who's never watched the league before, to get people into it, to do that kind of analysis and to really sort of try to bring people in and show them what's exciting about what we have going on.
How do you usually cover games? Do you get to travel to watch them in person? Do you watch them and then write about them using pool quotes, or how does all that work?
Yeah, so I have traveled to a couple of games, but of my own accord and just mostly for fun. But I do like getting that perspective of being at a game when I can. But for the majority of the time, my coverage is me watching the games at home. Thankfully, the NWSL streams mostly on Paramount Plus. So if you have that, you're usually set. Sometimes CBS Sports, but mostly Paramount Plus. So I can get all of the games at home, and I'm sort of watching. I like to take notes during the games of sort of big moments, any player milestones that are reached. We have a lot of players right now reaching their 100th game, their 50th game, their 10,000 minutes in the league. So I like to make note of all of that. And then afterwards, I will follow along with any post-game press conferences and sort of pull quotes from there. And then I will sort of craft my analysis based on those notes, usually the next day, and get that out in the evening.
In a world where everyone wants to see people or visual, how do you make writing exciting and draw people in?
Yeah, it's hard, right? We live in a world of social media and of Instagram, which is awesome as well. And I know that brings a lot of people to the league, and I'm really grateful for all the people that do that work. That's not my thing. I wish I had more talent in that area. But as a writer, I know that words still have power. I think that if you are focusing on highlight moments, you are figuring out what was the most important player in that game, and being able to sum something up like that succinctly is really important in terms of writing for sports, because people don't want to read a novel about a game because they would rather just watch it. So whatever you're writing has to be super important in the terms of that this is the best thing that happened in that game, and here's why, not just it happened.
So I want to bring up something that has nothing to do with NWSL, but it does have something to do with it. So about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, Draymond Green made a comment about storytelling of the WNBA and how there aren't enough stories tied to the game, and that's what's preventing people from watching it. Same could probably be said for NWSL being a women's league. Do you see some of that? And does that encourage you to want to do more storytelling about the women in this league? Or do you think that that's all BS, what he said?
No, I think that there's definitely truth to that. I think that people love sports because of the people that play them. I think that following somebody's story, triumph, I mean, look at the last World Cup. We had the Men's World Cup, which is always a big event. But I think that a lot of people were following it because they wanted to see what was Messi was going to do. So I think that you can reflect and have some of that in the Women's League by focusing on these players that have incredible stories, because lots of them do. And if you get to talk to those players or write pieces on them specifically, those are some of my favorite pieces to write, are just profiles on very specific teams, sort of following them through their journey, because it is a journey. Right now we have the New York team, Gotham FC, was bottom of the table, and now they're top of the table this season. That's a really cool story. How did they do that? Who made that happen? Because it didn't just happen magically overnight. There were lots of people involved. And if you can create a compelling story with people, then they're going to want to follow that narrative, even if they weren't into sports, I find, anyway.
Yeah, where does your story and writing background come from? We touched a little bit on theater and the storytelling that goes along with theater, with the light painting and all of that kind of stuff. Where does the writing come in, and how long have you been interested in doing that?
I think forever. Like I said, my parents used to joke that I was going to be an author. I was really into reading as a kid. I was an introvert, still kind of am. So I really connected with books at a young age. I tore through every series on the shelf as fast as I possibly could. I was reading at a way higher level than I should have been at a young age. So eventually I started running out of books that my mom had deemed appropriate for me to read, even though I could have read them because I would have understood them. But maybe they weren't there yet content-wise. So I started writing my own stories just because I wanted something else to read, and really running with that imagination that I had as a kid and bringing that into my adulthood is a very important way for me to like express emotions through writing, for sure, and storytelling.
Where do you draw inspiration from, and what genres are you really tied to aside from sports? I mean, you know, we are all... You know, we indulge in sports a lot of times, a little too much. But what, from a writing and theatrical standpoint, what genres do you really find yourself drawn towards?
I'm a huge sci-fi nerd. I've always been a sci-fi nerd. I love the idea of just going to a completely different world, somewhere that has different rules than the rules that we have here. I'm a big fan of Ready Player One, which is more of like a post-apocalyptic version of our world, but there's some really cool stuff going on there. Andy Weir, The Martian, Project Hail Mary, some of my favorite books. Really in love with the sci-fi genre as a whole, sci-fi movies, anything in that area, really.
So if you had an opportunity to kind of put all your dreams in a basket where it's theater and it's writing and sci-fi, what would be the plot of a sports sci-fi movie?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. Man, you can make an epic about that, right? Six books, okay? And then each one is a different section of the World Cup, right? And you are the other half of, so like we've got intergalactic World Cup now, right? You've got alien nations becoming involved in soccer and learning the sport. And now maybe it's anti-gravity, because that would be cool. And then... you know, there's got to be some weird politics going on as well, because there's always some weird politics in the sci-fi realm. Maybe a murder mystery, just for fun, on the side, of course, to the sports. But I would imagine something along those lines, you know, a redeeming underprivileged alien is working their way up in the soccer world and winning the World Cup for their intergalactic, I wouldn't say country, planet, or their intergalactic planet.
Has anyone ever... I mean, I'm not really into sci-fi, but has anyone ever made any, whether it's books or films or whatever, a sports themed sci-fi product?
Not that I'm aware of, and I feel like I should be. If there is any, I need to get on that. But not that I'm aware of. Usually sci-fi tends to live in either like the war genre or like space romance kind of thing.
Do you think it would be something that people would draw towards because it is something that is out of the ordinary that, you know, people haven't done? But do you think that that's something that can be done, should be done, would be done after this episode?
Yeah, I think that it would be really fun. I think that sports and sci-fi share that sort of hero aspect. You're following a team, a player, a hero that you truly love and root for, no matter what. And so I think that that would really bring in people from both sides for sure.
All right, let's get into some advice. What is some of the best advice that you've gotten, or worst advice? And what's some advice that you would have for up and coming people who are trying to figure it out, who may be in some, you know, out of the realm job or space or background, who wants to work in sports or theater or theatrical sports?
Yeah, for sure. I got told once in high school that every show is just a show and no show is more important than any other show, which is sort of true and sort of not true. I take it with a grain of salt, but in the feeling that you can bounce back from a bad show the same way that a team can bounce back from a bad game. So I try to move on quickly from any sort of setbacks that I experience. And I found that has been really helpful to sort of have a short memory, be like a goldfish in Ted Lasso terms, and sort of move on as quickly as possible from failure and look ahead. And my advice to people wanting to get into sports is that this is a really diverse community in terms of people coming from all different places to converge on a love of sports. And if you don't think that you have the experience, I would just encourage you to apply and to make those connections, and you will find somewhere in this area for you to exist for sure.
You know, growing up, who did you look to or look at that really made you say, maybe I want to do that one day?
Well, I found soccer by accident. So I found soccer pretty late, actually, in the lead up to the 2019 Women's World Cup is sort of when I really got into it. Because I grew up in suburban Atlanta, and that was all college football and baseball. So I wasn't really around soccer for most of my young life. And it wasn't really a game that was talked about unless you were like in first grade. So when I found the World Cup and I was so inspired by these women and their time, especially at that time when they were fighting for equal pay and just being really inspired by them, not only doing that, but also going on and winning games in the incredible fashion and form that they were. I think that whole team really inspired me to get involved and to want to be a part of this story and this sport.
I think that. Yeah, that's awesome. I guess, how did you get involved with FanSided and the Women's Sports Exchange, working on your nights and weekends, you know, a little bit of your time, but how did you get involved in that and start writing for them?
Yeah, for sure. Actually, Twitter, which I don't like saying now because it still can be a scary place depending on the day, but connecting with sports fans on Twitter is how I found FanSided, because one of their editors, Ian, tweeted about wanting more coverage for women's sports when we were in the off season of the NWSL, sort of waiting for things to ramp back up. And they didn't have any writers for the NWSL at the time. And so I reached out and he was like, yes, absolutely. And now there's two of us, which is great. And I found Women's Sports Exchange the same way. I followed them on Twitter for a long time and really loved their work. And saw that they were calling out for writers and sent in some of my stuff that I had done with FanSided and another sort of sample piece that I had done for them, and have found really good community that way, and just keeping that up ever since.
You said that you got into soccer late, you know, with the 2019 World Cup. How would you have covered it in from your perspective? It's almost like a what would you say to your younger self? But looking back on 2019, what would you have done and how would you have covered it if you were working in that space at the time?
Oh, that would have been awesome. I think that I would have once again tried to focus on individual players because that World Cup was wild in terms of the players that we had go. Because we had lots of players that were sort of on their last World Cup, making a victory lap. And those stories are always super interesting of players who have been through such a long period of time in the sport, especially in women's sports, because we're in a period of incredible growth and change. So you've got players like Megan Rapinoe and Becky Sauerbrunn that have been with this team for so long and have been through so many different iterations of it. And in terms of getting things like equal pay and getting more media coverage and getting more resources and more support from their federation over time, and really wanting to focus on that as they went into the World Cup, and sort of how we would evolve from there, which I don't know if anyone could have predicted how much it was going to grow in the coming years, but really focusing on that growth aspect from the beginning would have been a really cool thing to go through.
So the next Women's World Cup is in New Zealand in a short bit, a month, right?
Yeah, we're 50 days today, actually, yeah.
Do you get to, are you going to be covering that from home? Or do you get to cover any of their training sessions leading up to that or any of their friendlies or anything like that?
So I'm covering it from home. I will not be able to make the trip out there. It's a really long flight. But I am going to the send-off game that they're playing against Wales in July, and I'm very excited about covering that. But in terms of the cup itself, yeah, I'll be covering it from home, which will still be super exciting. It's going to be a really, really great tournament, and who knows who's going to come out on top.
So can you give us a little bit of a preview of what people might be able to expect, maybe a player to watch on the U.S. side that, you know, you rattled off a couple that are household names now. Is there somebody who's maybe not a household name that is going to make an impact on the team this year?
For sure. I think that I feel like they say this every World Cup, but we really are in a period of growth. We're in a period of change in the United States. We've got a lot of veteran players, but a lot of really young, really exciting talent. So I think Trinity Rodman is going to have an incredible impact on this World Cup. I think that she's going to make a huge difference and is going to be with this team for a long while to come. And people should definitely keep their eye on her.
Yeah, genetically, she's got some good genes, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into Pride Month a little bit and talk about your experience working in sports as an LGBTQ plus person. Just talk a little bit about how open people have been, maybe some challenges that you faced.
So I think the biggest challenge I faced so far was being my own barrier. I was so scared to get into the sports industry for fear of feeling like an outcast and for feeling not accepted, which I feel like can still be very true in several sects of sports. But in women's sports in particular, I've always felt really welcomed by the community. I feel like there's lots of members of the LGBTQ community working in women's sports and working to change the game, and there's more are coming in every day. I wish there were more trans voices like myself in sports. I think we definitely need more of that. So sometimes it gets a little lonely because there's not any of that connection all the time. But other than that, I've really enjoyed meeting other people in sports that are part of the queer community and seeing pride flags at games, not even pride games, just most games or banners like the Protect Trans Kids banner, just at every match has been really welcoming in terms of atmosphere. And I've never felt more welcomed in a sports area. Like I said, I grew up in Georgia. So going to sports games down there, you don't see rainbow flags, at an MLB game, not really. So finding that in women's soccer has been incredibly, almost relieving. Like there is a place for people, in sports if they want to be here.
With that being said, what type of things do you think can be done more, and not just from a performative standpoint, but just to make more people welcome, for people to be authentically themselves in this space? and in society in general.
Yeah, for sure. I think that with Pride Month coming up, we're going to see a lot of clubs push a lot of efforts. And I think it's really interesting to pay attention to what kind of efforts those are, because I'm really big advocate for clubs advocating in their communities and sort of creating change in places close to home and partnering with organizations that make an impact. I know Gotham is partnering with Play Proud. I know that OL Reign has partnered with trans families up in Washington State, which has been great, and just looking for more of that in the space in general, and really welcoming organizations like that into games will bring more people into feeling like this is a safe space for them to be if they can see that these clubs want to work with organizations that are actually making a difference in their communities.
And how vital is it for people like yourself to see people actually put forth effort to welcome people in the LGBTQ community?
Oh, it's life-changing. It feels so incredibly safe in a time where we have more anti-trans and anti-queer legislation being pushed this year than ever before, to see a sports team, a professional sports team, take a stance against something like that is incredibly welcoming. And it feels like somebody has your back who could actually make more of a difference than an individual, because individuals are going to start all of it. And that's important as well. But I think that having these organizations really take a strong stance and welcome in these communities to their games is really important.
What would be something that you would say to your younger self? Whether advice, encouragement, or anything of that nature?
I would say that you're going to find the answers, because when I was growing up, there wasn't that representation. I didn't know that being trans was an option. I was just really confused and really scared. And so I think that knowing that I was going to figure out what was happening, that I wasn't just weird or scared or introverted, that there was a safe space for me and an identity that I was finally going to feel comfortable with out there for me. I just didn't know it yet. Would be really comforting to my younger self, knowing that you're going to figure it out. It's just going to take some time and a couple location changes.
Last question that I'll have is, when you hear the word representation, what does that, when you hear the word representation, what does that mean to you?
To me, it means having, people that have been historically underrepresented be on the big screen, be in spotlights. We just had our first trans athlete score a goal, and then WSL Quinn just scored their first goal. And that was a momentous representation moment, because it's something that's never happened before. And that's very exciting for everybody.
So you've talked a little bit about your experience covering the game. I'm wondering, where's your favorite place that you've watched a game or covered a game?
So I went to the University of Cincinnati, which means that my closest NWSL stadium was actually in Louisville, Kentucky. It's called Lynn Family Stadium. It's pretty small, but it's also very new, which means that it's really nice. And the atmosphere there has been incredible. Those fans, they bring it hard every time. And I just had a really great time going there with my friends. It's a quick 90-minute drive from Cincy, so it was our best option. But I am going to Red Bull Arena this weekend, and I've heard that that is an incredible atmosphere, so I'm really excited to experience that as well. Getting to every NWSL stadium is on my bucket list. We'll get that one at a time.
All right. I lied about last questions. If you had one pitch to people who are not fans of NWSL, what would be your pitch to get them to either come to a game, watch a game, or become a fan of the game?
That our players are absolutely world-class, and there's no other league that has as many world-class players as we do. I mean, you've got World Cup winners, Olympic gold medalists, and you've got that in other leagues too. But I think that the distribution of those players across teams is really remarkable. That you can see Megan Rapinoe in Seattle, or you can see Marta play in Orlando, is just really, really cool. And I think that those big names do draw people in, and then you get to really experience how many awesome international players we have in this league.
So you're saying it's not like the New York Liberty getting Breanna Stewart and, you know, their super team together?
Yeah, Yeah, I would say that there are definitely super teams in the NWSL, but there are, everybody has a star pretty much, or everybody has a couple big names at least on their roster that they're playing with at this point.
Yeah, and soccer is more of a, I mean, it takes 11 players to play, right? How big of a factor is a superstar in soccer relative to something like basketball?
Yeah, I think that those players still can have a really big impact. I mean, having a Roosevelt on your team is definitely going to make a difference, and you're going to notice that. But I think that the teams that find the most success are the ones that have a greater sort of variation in players scoring goals. So you don't want it to all just be one player, because then you're unfortunately the Chicago Red Stars, who are now bottom of the table after unfortunately losing Mallory Swanson. So I think that you can't rely on the star power, because the Kansas City Current last season, they made it to the championship, and they didn't really have any huge international team players. And they had a lot of goals spread out between their players, which was really cool to see. It's a real team effort.
So where can they find, where can our listeners find your work, and where can they find you on social?
Yeah, so they can find me on Twitter at Oliver with two R's Hunt. And that has a little link tree to all my work. And they can find me on Fansided and Women's Sports Exchange.
You got anything else you want to add?
Go to games, guys. It's almost because it's Pride season. If you're nervous about going to your first game, I would recommend going to a Pride match, because they're always super high energy and everyone is feeling even more welcoming than usual. So I would really encourage people to just get out and go to a game. Try one, see how it goes. I promise you'll have a good time.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.